I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 9th, and we have a lot to talk about. And our first order of business is to acknowledge that this week is MS Awareness Week. Joining me to talk about their MS journeys are Tracy Cooper-Harris and Sarah Quezada. Tracy and Sarah are sharing their personal stories to help raise awareness of the many different faces of MS. And when it comes to MS awareness, I have my own theory that at some point in their lives, everyone knows someone with MS. It might be a neighbor that they knew growing up, or maybe a member of their own extended family. But when I'm talking with someone and I want to raise their awareness or understanding about MS, I'll start that conversation by asking the person I'm talking to whether they know someone with MS. It sometimes takes them a minute to reconnect with a distant memory, and other times it's right there. They think of it right away because it's someone they're close to. But I've found that almost always, everyone knows someone with MS. And once they're reconnected with the thought or memory of that person, well, you can see the light go on in their eyes. And in that moment, MS has just become a little more personal to them. It's become a little more real. And that's why sharing our stories is so important, so that MS is no longer an anonymous, faceless disease to people. Once someone knows someone with MS, they stop thinking that MS has something to do with Jerry's kids and those telethons they used to watch years ago, and they start thinking about how this sometimes invisible disease can change the course of someone's life. So I hope you'll share your stories as people living with MS, as MS care partners, as MS researchers and clinicians. Our voices have power, and collectively, our stories can change the world. I want to give a special shout out to the California State Assembly, specifically California Assembly Member Luz Rivas, Assembly Member Kevin McCarty, and Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon for crafting a resolution recognizing MS Awareness Week. The resolution is designed to, well, I'll just quote the authors of the resolution, to encourage residents of the state of California to join together in raising awareness and heightening public knowledge of this debilitating disease. And perhaps as a bit of evidence supporting the power of sharing our stories, I'll share with you that this resolution happened because I shared my story of how progressive MS impacted every facet of my family's life. For some reason, that story resonated with Speaker Rendon and his legislative staff, and we've stayed in touch over the last few years, renewing our relationship each year on State Action Day when we discuss how the speaker can best support the issues that are important to families affected by MS. So when I wanted to see my state legislature recognize MS Awareness Week, I contacted the Assembly Speaker's office, and they were willing to get the ball rolling because of a relationship that was begun by sharing a story. And while we're sharing stories, if you haven't yet taken our first ever Real Talk MS listener survey, I hope you'll do me a favor and spend just a couple of minutes completing the survey today. You'll be giving me an opportunity to learn a little bit more about the Real Talk MS listener community, and you'll give yourself an opportunity to win a $100 Amazon gift card. The survey is pretty quick. It'll take you less than 7 minutes to complete. And it would mean a lot to me if you could do me that favor. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey. As I mentioned a moment ago, my guests today are Tracy Cooper-Harris and Sarah Quezada. Just as MS affects each person differently, these two women have vastly different MS journeys. But there's also a certain commonality in the experience of living with MS. And as you listen to our conversation, I think you'll hear and maybe even identify with some of the things that Tracy and Sarah have already experienced. But before we get to my conversation with Tracy Cooper Harris and Sarah Quezada, there are a few other things that you should know about. This past week, the FDA approved a third COVID-19 vaccine in the United States. This vaccine is from Johnson & Johnson, and it only requires that you receive a single vaccination instead of the two vaccinations that both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines require. The clinical trial data from the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is currently being reviewed by the National MS Society's COVID-19 Vaccine Advisory Group, and you can expect this group to provide guidance for people living with MS with respect to this vaccine very shortly. And when that guidance becomes available, we'll definitely be sharing it with you right here. High-efficacy disease-modifying therapies are proving themselves to be exactly that, highly effective at managing the physical aspects of MS. But what about the cognitive features of MS? The MS Society points out that more than half of all the people living with MS may develop some problems with cognition. And cognitive issues often begin in the earliest phases of the disease. So, as the physical symptoms of MS continue to be better managed, could we be heading toward cognitive impairment without physical disability in MS? Well, that's a conclusion of a recent study led by Dr. Claire Riley at Columbia University and presented at the recent ACTRIMS Forum. The study points out that there is already a small percentage of people living with MS who experience cognitive declines without experiencing any motor deficits like balance, coordination, or posture. Dr. Riley refers to this as cognitive dominant MS. And when this happens, it becomes difficult to diagnose MS, so treatment is delayed. This is a really interesting study that presents us with something to think about. As disease-modifying therapies become more and more effective, does MS become even more invisible? And not just by making physical disability invisible, but also making cognitive dysfunction more difficult to identify, let alone treat. It's something we need to start thinking about in the near-term future as we celebrate the arrival of even bigger and better disease-modifying therapies. If you'd like to review the details of Dr. Riley's study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. An autoimmune disease is an illness that causes the immune system to produce antibodies that attack normal body tissues or processes. It's a situation where the body mistakenly attacks itself. MS is an autoimmune disease in which the immune system attacks healthy myelin in the central nervous system. But MS isn't the only autoimmune disease. It's one of the more than 80 autoimmune diseases that scientists have so far identified. And in an effort to focus the efforts of the research community on the different aspects of autoimmune disease, the National MS Society has teamed up with the Lupus Research Alliance and the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation to create a new grant program called Decoding Immune-Mediated Diseases, Novel Approaches for Therapeutic Insights. This year, the new program will provide funding for 8 research projects offering $450,000 over 2 years or $225,000 over 1 year, depending upon the length of each particular study. And if you'd like to learn more about this new grant program or review the initial studies that are being funded, you'll find a link in today's show notes. MS has an impact on quality of life, and I'm fairly certain that's something that you already know. And research has shown that the impact of MS on quality of life isn't purely tied to someone's level of physical disability. So researchers have attempted to look beyond physical disability to understand which other aspects of MS may have an impact on someone's quality of life. Fatigue is a symptom of MS that not only affects up to 80% of the people living with MS, but fatigue also has been identified as the MS symptom that most interferes with everyday life among just over half of all the people living with MS. Fatigue presents itself in one of two forms, motor fatigue or cognitive fatigue, and a research team in Denmark wanted to explore whether fatigue plays a greater role than physical disability itself when it comes to impacting quality of life. So they recruited 79 people who had been treated at the MS clinic at Aalborg University Hospital, the largest hospital in the North Denmark region. The median age of the study participants was 44. The median duration of MS among them was 9 years. And 90% of the study participants had relapsing remitting MS with a median EDSS score of 2.5. Remember, EDSS stands for Expanded Disability Status Scale, and it's the universal measure of MS disability on a scale of 0 to 10. The study participants completed a battery of questionnaires designed to measure fatigue in relation to cognitive, motor, psychosocial, and health status. The responses to these surveys were analyzed against each person's EDSS score. And the research team concluded that motor fatigue was most closely related to quality of life compared with cognitive fatigue scores. Physical disability, a person's EDSS score, also asserted itself as a significant factor in quality of life. The research team pointed out that they didn't examine the role of depression among people with MS, as fatigue may be a result of depression rather than a result of MS, nor did they evaluate comorbidities, that is, other health conditions, or medications that might affect fatigue and the quality of someone's sleep. We still need to better understand fatigue itself so that effective treatments can be developed to overcome this particular symptom of MS that affects so many and has the power to just shut you down. And given the fact that quality of life is such a highly subjective measure, researchers need to continue the work of identifying the various aspects of MS that are the major contributors to how someone defines their quality of life, so that we can begin to realize the promise of personalized medicine, where individual, personalized treatment plans can be developed and prescribed. If you'd like to learn more about this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. I think that all of us, people living with MS, along with everyone else, I think we constantly strive to improve our quality of life. I think it's a universal aspect of human nature. My two guests today are in the midst of completely different MS journeys, but I think they've both discovered that choosing to lead by example and live their lives out loud has had a very positive effect on their quality of life. In a moment, we'll meet Tracy Cooper Harris and Sarah Quezada. As I mentioned at the top of this episode, this week is MS Awareness Week, and I'm talking with Sarah Quezada and Tracy Cooper Harris, two women who were both living with MS, and the three of us actually met more than a year ago when we were part of a video for the National MS Society. Sarah, Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi.
Sarah, can you tell us when you were diagnosed and what were your initial thoughts when you first received your diagnosis?
I was diagnosed, July will be 9 years this year, and I didn't really know anything about MS at all. I knew that there were a couple celebrities that had it, but other than that, I just didn't know anything. And at the time, my kids were really small. They were like almost one and like a year and a half, two. And I just was really concerned how I would be able to be like a good mother if I was sick or if I couldn't carry them or if we couldn't go to the park. And it really just was really stressful thinking about like what their future was with me as their mom.
That's something I want to circle back to in a couple of minutes, as a matter of fact. Let me ask you, Tracy, I know that most everyone is to some degree or another surprised when they're first diagnosed with MS. But I think your diagnosis was probably more surprising than most. Can you tell us about that?
Basically, I was a college student. I lived pretty close to Caltech, and they have research studies for college students. So I was going down to Caltech in their functional MRI machine, you know, doing some experiments in there, getting paid for it, which was awesome. And whoever was doing quality control on the functional MRI machines, I guess it was a neurologist at the Children's Hospital in LA. When he looked at the fMRIs, he said, "This looks like MS, but I can't tell because this isn't a medical quality MRI." He contacted my VA primary care doctor. She called me and said, "We need to come in and have you do some MRIs." She was really great with the approach because I have a family history of MS. My mom had MS. She had it for about 20 years. She was diagnosed in 1981. So I knew about MS. I saw what MS could do, in addition to what Sarah was saying about, you know, knowing about celebrities who had it, like Richard Pryor, Annette Funicello, which, you know, the original Mouseketeer, Terry Garr, things like that. So I kind of knew what this diagnosis could mean. And I started, like, this sounds so bad. I started like getting, you know, making sure I got all my end of life things in order and stuff like that, just because my mom's MS, it was progressive and it just kept on getting worse and worse and worse. She lost her battle after 20 years in 2001. She was only 51 years old. So with my diagnosis, it was just from that part alone, it was hard to grasp. And then, you know, the typical challenges that most folks with MS have when they're trying to make the official diagnosis. They try to rule out other neurological issues. They were thinking it could be Lyme's disease, you name it, just because of the jobs I had in the military. They were just going back and forth what, you know, it could be, possibly starting treatments, things like that. So that's why when, you know, asking Sarah, for example, you know, when was she diagnosed? And most people can give pretty much a clear example. Okay, I was diagnosed here. I usually say somewhere around 2009, 2010, because that time frame was just so crazy and hectic. I think it is officially 2010, my diagnosis. So it'll be coming up on 11 years this summer. So, but yeah, it was definitely a shock. This was also something that my pop was a little bit worried about, you know, as I had gotten older. And I just happened to just be one of those anomalies that ended up also having to deal with MS, but more fortunate than others because we have so many, you know, disease modifying drugs and therapies and stuff like that out now that they didn't have during my mom's diagnosis. And she was so far along that none of those treatments would have been able to really do any good. So I'm, you know, it's bittersweet, but I'm still grateful that, you know, I'm living in this time now. So, yeah.
So while you really hadn't experienced much in the way of symptoms, you were unfortunately very familiar with MS because of your yes, mom. Sir. So what yeah. was it like for you growing up in a household where one of your parents was living with progressive MS?
My mom was really good about education. Whatever like books and information that she had available, she would let me read on it, things like that. We didn't know that much about MS back then. You know, we knew the National Multiple Sclerosis Society was out. You know, they had events for people living with MS and stuff like that. But other than that, it was just, you know, she was fatigued more easily. She would get lost very easily when it came to driving. As she got progressively worse, her balance, her mobility was affected. Her speech was affected. I want to say the last 2 years of her life, she just stopped talking. You know, she needed assistance with, you know, activities of daily living, eating, drinking, stuff like that. So, but in the beginning, it was just like, oh, it's just little things here and there. Like, okay, but you know, we could get through it. It wasn't that big of a deal. None of us knew or thought that it would progress as bad as it did. Or at least I didn't think, or maybe they hid it from me as a kid. But to best of my knowledge, I don't remember any talk of it getting so bad that mom would be in the wheelchair or bedridden or anything like that. You know, a couple of she needed a cane to walk. That was no big deal. That was just it.
Sarah, as you mentioned a couple minutes ago, you're a young mother yourself. You were a younger mother when you were diagnosed. And you initially had those concerns kind of go through your head. What's it been like for you living with MS while you're raising your children?
I think for them, they know that I have MS. They handle it so well. Like things that I feel bad for, like they don't even register. Like days when I'm too exhausted to get out of bed, we order pizza and we watch movies all day. And that's great to them, and I give myself mom guilt for not being more active with them or whatever, but they just handle it like with such grace because it's the only, version of me that they've ever known. I remember my daughter was in kindergarten and one of her friends was like, "Why does your mom use that stick?" And my daughter was like, "Oh, cause she has holes in her brain because that's how we explain it." And that poor little girl was terrified looking like, my daughter was just so matter of fact about it. And, so I kind of had to go in and say, no, I'm a sick, but I just need this. It helps me walk, So it's funny to have like a 5-year-old explain it to another 5-year-old, but now that they're older, it's just part of us. Like we participate at Walk MS and I'm very involved in other ways with the National MS Society. And I will say it makes me so incredibly proud of my children because when they see someone with a mobility aid, they hurry up, they run ahead to hold open the door. If it's like another kid, they just say hello. They don't see it as anything different because that's how their life has been their whole life. I really love that. Like my kids just have such huge hearts and it makes me so proud as a mom.
We often refer to multiple sclerosis as an invisible disease because sometimes you can look at someone who's living with MS and you might not see any of their symptoms. They're simply not visible. But in your case, Sarah, you use a mobility device. So your MS isn't invisible. Has that changed anything?
So it did change kind of how I viewed myself for a while. Just using a walker, I'm very aware of that. Sometimes people talk louder to me when I'm using my walker. And I always tell them my hearing works just fine. But I was also internalizing a lot of that myself with like, I'm on a walker now. I was, I think I had just turned 30. Like I was too young to be, to be having this. But I would say like within the last 3 or 4 years, I've really dealt more with having MS and kind of being a face of MS. In the beginning, I still don't like making people uncomfortable. So like, if they'd be like, "Oh, how are you doing?" And I could tell they were kind of pitying me, I would just make a joke so we could move on. And I really didn't deal with a lot of the feelings of having a disease that I live with every day and how that like impacts my life. Now that I've kind of owned what it means to have this disease and that, yes, physically I need walking aids or, I forget people's questions pretty easily. Now I really try to look at it like MS is just a part of me. Like it doesn't define who I am, but it's definitely here. And I have to know how to respect it so we can get along in the same body.
And Tracy, your MS is invisible. So the only way that someone might know that you're living with multiple sclerosis is if you choose to come out and share your diagnosis. What's that been like for you?
I think one of the big challenges right now, I am actually looking for employment. I just graduated back last May, and I want to work basically either in government or nonprofit civil service type of work. And basically outing yourself, and on a lot of the applications that it has on there, do you self-identify? And that was something that is hard for me to put down. I think especially not necessarily in the public sector, but in the private sector, because you know, you don't know how that might manifest itself to maybe you not getting the job, or, you know, other people thinking, oh, well, you only got the job because, you know, you listed that you are a disabled veteran. And then, you know, when once you disclose that disability and people don't see anything and you're like, oh, you look good. What's wrong with you? Well, you know, it takes a lot of hard work to look this good. It really does. So you really don't know what people are going through. And, you know, folks that are out there with basically medical conditions that are not as obvious, it does present a challenge. Some of it can be just, you know, providing a little bit of education on these are the challenges that I face and, you know, working with, you know, immediate supervisors and things like that to make sure that those accommodations that you need for work are there for you, not being, you know, thinking, oh, you know, I really don't need this. Oh, I'm too much of a burden, things like that. And I'm a veteran as well. So this is something that is, I think, can be a little bit more of a challenge in the veteran space as well, because a lot of times veterans also deal with a lot of invisible injuries with post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury. There are veterans out there living with MS and to varying degrees. So when you do have this, you know, injury, and let's say at some point in time, I actually had a service dog. And, you know, when you look like there's nothing wrong with you and you have folks that challenge you, what do you need a dog for? And, you know, you can either make light of it. Oh, this dog is here for your protection. So I don't, you know, basically go off on you for asking me these dumb questions. Or you can, you know, basically do the, you know, they provide a service. There are a couple of medical issues I have and they, you know, do these certain, and they do a couple of things for me. Thank you so much for asking. And, you know, let me be on my way. It can be stressful to navigate when it looks like you are normal, because sometimes people think, oh, you're just trying to pull a fast one. You know, oh, nothing's really wrong. Maybe you're just malingering or faking or anything like that. I was actually talking with another veteran the other night, and I'm a member of an organization called Paralyzed Veterans of America. And I didn't realize that this vet I was on the phone with, he's also a member. And we're sitting on a Zoom call, and all of a sudden he just pulls off his prosthetic leg and he's like, bam, I'm a member too. I'm like, you wouldn't know. And that's the thing. So I almost feel like with especially MS, because it can manifest in so many different ways. It's a snowflake disease. Sarah looking great down there, raising these two kids with her family and stuff like that, you know, and people are like, oh, you know, you just walk with a cane. You look fine. Nothing's wrong with you. It takes a lot to look this good. And for folks to have a little bit more empathy on that, and not just thinking that we are out for attention or, you know, trying to, I guess, milk the sick card or anything like that. I think that's really important to have that empathy towards other people, because you really don't know what they're going through. And even though we might look great today, you know, how much did it take for us to get out of bed, put on the clothes, you know, help get the kids dressed, you know, make sure these cats aren't, you know, tearing up the house type of things. And those are things that people don't see. But those are things that, like, our families see, our loved ones, our close friends get to see. So I think it can be a little bit more challenging. And these are one of the things where I think people can actually do a little bit better in just kind of taking a step back and looking at their own biases and just listen and just not think, oh, just because you look so great that nothing is wrong with you. Because we all, folks are struggling with stuff that no one has any idea about.
You received your honorable discharge after a 12-year career in the military, during which time you received more than 24 medals and commendations. In the military, you're trained to go over, around, or through any obstacles that stand in the way of completing your mission. And I'm wondering whether that philosophy or that mindset has had any effect or impact on your MS journey.
I think so. In the beginning, there was a lot of worry more than anything else, just because I had seen what my mom went through and then what my pop had to go through in helping care for and advocate on behalf of my mom as she progressively got sicker. And that was one of the things that I wanted to make sure that, you know, my spouse, she had all the resources, tools, and everything else that she needed. If something, if things were to progress to the level that my mom's progression with MS had taken, that she could get all the resources, assistance, help, support that she needed to help take care of me. That was that would be like the least I could do. And so I wanted to make sure I was doing my due diligence and not only taking care of her, but then also, you know, making sure that there was more awareness out there for MS, making sure that as much as I could lend my voice to the cause, to making sure that folks were aware of when events were going on, participating in events, fundraising, basically being involved in PSAs and things like that. And showing that the breadth of diversity in the MS community, because, you know, most of the times with MS, you know, it's just seen as mostly women, mostly, you know, people that are not people of color. You don't usually see veterans, things like that. So I believe that getting different faces out there that do have MS and basically having that ability to have someone say, you know what? I've had some of these weird symptoms. Maybe this could be MS, you know, and at least having a neurologist check it out, because the earlier you could get diagnosed and get put on those disease modifying therapies, the better your prognosis is with the disease in the long run. And that I know is really big, especially in the African-American community. So if I could do anything to lend my voice to that, and moving forward. And that's, I think, some of that military tenacity. We're here now. We have MS, like Sarah said, but that doesn't mean that defines us. Where I'm going to keep on doing everything I can, you know, including trying to ride this skateboard that I just got the other day, which my wife is like, I know you're not riding the skateboard. I'm like, yes, I'm reliving my youth. I'm going to do it. The thing is, you have to do it. The worst that can happen is, you know, If you don't try to make a difference, then, you know, nothing changes. So I have to at least try.
Sarah, one of my other roles is to serve as the chair of the California Government Relations Advisory Committee for the MS Society. And I couldn't help but notice that you joined us this past May for our State Action Day. So thank you for lending your voice to our advocacy efforts, and I'm hoping you can share why you chose to get involved in MS advocacy.
Honestly, I had no idea that we even could be like MS activists until I was talking to someone that runs one of the support groups through the National MS Society, and she was like, you would be a great MS activist. And I was like, what are you talking about? So when she explained it, I was super excited. I was going to go up to Sacramento, and, you know, then everything got shut down. So I participated in my first one online, but I still learned so much stuff, and just to contact your representatives and, you know, to really work for things that benefit people living with, you know, MS and just kind of disabilities as a whole. You know, the first time I like went to make a phone call to my rep, I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then it was like this nice guy answered the phone and he let me say my whole thing. And he was like, great, have a nice day. And it was like really easy to do. But in my head, I had like pumped it up to this like totally intimidating thing, you know? And so I really enjoy being a part of it. I hope to continue to be more involved when life goes back to normal. Like, I live really close to my representative's office and I had no idea. So it's been an exciting, fun, new little venture for me.
I'm really glad to hear that. And I have a last question for both of you. So let me start with you, Sarah. Tell me what's important to you about MS Awareness Week.
Two things. Like, for me as the person living with MS, I think it's really important to, like, kind of what I said earlier, like, I have MS, it's a part of me, but I don't want it to be like the one defining fact, like factor of when you think of me, you know, I always make jokes that I don't want to be known as the mom with MS, but I am the mom with MS. So I've kind of had a, you know, to get there, but I have definitely rectified it all in my head now. And me and MS are cool. We're working it out. And then just for my children, like I said, I love their hearts and I love them growing up knowing that, you know, people have disabilities, invisible ones, ones you can see, you know, but I think it's so important to them, like for them, I mean, for MS Awareness Week, like part of why they like going to Walk MS is because they see other kids who have our same situation. And at their school, I'm, as far as I know, as far as it seems, I'm the only one with any kind of mobility aid that's not a grandma or a grandpa. And so I really love for MS Awareness Week, like they're in this relationship with MS too. And I think it's really vital for them to see other kids know that, that, you know, other parents have these same things going on.
Tracy, same question. What's important to you about MS Awareness Week?
I'm going to piggyback off of some of what Sarah said. You know, a lot of it is actually showcasing what we're doing out here. You know, basically, we are living life. We're out here doing advocacy work, talking to our legislators, excuse me, about some of the issues and challenges that we're facing. We're participating in events to raise money and, you know, get moving, get active. We are making sure that we are trying to provide a better life for our kids, our families, folks that are around us, because those family members are such a big amount of support for us. And, you know, being able to provide them with through the National MS Society to get additional help, resources, things like that is incredible and amazing. Also, being able to show, you know, what someone with MS looks like. When my mom was first diagnosed, there was really nothing out there about, okay, what this is. You know, there were just some, you know, little books out there, little stick figures, like, oh, you know, issues with the signals from the brain to all other parts of the central nervous system, but, you know, nothing about progression. And, you know, showing the type of funding and research and the new drugs that are out there. There's still not a cure yet, but the possibility is becoming more of a possibility of there being either a cure or cures for it, because everybody's MS is different. So it might not just be one type of thing. It might be, you know, a few different things that are out there depending on the person. So, you know, MS Awareness Week for me is more just showing ourselves, showing us, you know, living our lives and showing just the diversity in our community. Like I said, from you, John, having a you know, your wife who is diagnosed with MS and, you know, basically being a strong advocate on her behalf, to you, Sarah, basically being a mom with MS, and hats off to you. Whatever support that we can get out there for not just the people who are living with MS and who are MS warriors, but also folks who are in their circle, their family, those support that are out there, all of that really makes a difference. So, you know, this MS Awareness Week is just for everybody in the MS community to basically say, hey, you know, we might have the MS, but MS doesn't have us. And, you know, what are we going to do next? We need to make sure that we are doing everything in our power to bring more light to this disease. It seems like they're still finding new interesting research and studies and stuff like that on MS. Like, you know, it's stuff is always being updated. Things are changing. And so we're learning new stuff. And the more we learn, the better we can basically either try to find a cure or find better drugs to treat. And, you know, that is an exciting possibility.
Well, Sarah Quezada and Tracy Cooper-Harris, thank you both for living your lives out loud and using your voices to help raise awareness of MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, John.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/184. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I want to remind you that it would mean a lot to me if you could take just a few minutes and fill out our online listener survey. Completing the survey will take you less than 7 minutes, but it will allow me to learn a little bit more about the Real Talk MS listener community, and you'll be entered into a drawing for a $100 Amazon gift card. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey. Walk MS 2021 is coming, and this year, Walk MS will meet you where you are to connect, celebrate, and make a difference like never before. I'll be walking, and I hope you're planning to join me this year. You can learn more and register at walkms.org, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.